Hello, I'm Martin Hindley and you're listening to the Champions Rugby Show. To celebrate 25 years of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup, you're about to hear from one of the best hookers in rugby history.
And Wood is there, the try given, his second try. The captain is having a day of days.
2 decades ago, he was playing for Munster in the European Cup final at Twickenham. He led Harlequins to glory in the Challenge Cup, a former skipper of Ireland breaking records in the process, and the inaugural winner of the World Player of the Year. Joining me today, a real pleasure to say, is Keith Wood. Keith, thanks for coming on the show. How are you doing without live rugby to occupy you over the recent weeks? How are things?
I'm pretty fine, Martin. Thank you very much for having me on. It's nice. I think we're all getting a bit of a chance to be nostalgic. So half our conversation is talking about the past and some of it is looking towards the future. But, the present is very difficult for a huge number of people. But for me, I'm just taking it as a bit of a break. So I took a rest for a little while and I've been very busy for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Keith, you've done so much in rugby punditry in recent years. Have you ever had the chance really to reflect on your own career and really, I don't know, absorb all of the things that you achieved as a player?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I mostly live in the present. And when you're a sportsman, everything is about what are you going to do for this match that you're playing at the present moment in time. And then as soon as that game is over, you're immediately thinking about the next game and how you're going to deal with that. And when I retired, so I'm retired 17 years now. It actually has taken to this pandemic and this sudden lull in life where I've watched matches. I never really watched my matches on the way back. We did have analysis, but we rarely did a huge amount of navel gazing back in the day. So I watched Lions matches recently with my sons. It was the first time I'd watched all the games since I played in them 23 years ago, which is kind of frightening. But look, I like it. I loved it. I was very fortunate, privileged, in fact, to play for my country. And I had a great amount of enjoyment with it. And I always took the view that once it's over, it's over. But recently, I've been looking back. So some parts would have been very nice.
I had the privilege of listening to you on Off the Ball with Philip Brown last week, seeing you with the likes of Austin Healey on the Heineken Champions Cup Rewind as a Heineken ambassador. You're really at ease with rugby figures in your various media roles. Has that been able to replace some of that camaraderie that you used to enjoy in various dressing rooms all those years ago?
Yeah, I don't think so. The amount of fun you have in a change room, the fun you have on a tour, I think the pressures that you're under when you're trying to play and perform are so huge, and you share it with people. That's what the camaraderie is. You know that people have your back at that time. I definitely miss that when I finished. There were two things that helped me an awful lot out of it. One was I went working with the BBC, with guys that I'd played with before and knew, but also met an awful lot of new friends in there. And that chance of having a sense of team again was brilliant. And another one, which is slightly more alternative, I joined Sunningdale Golf Club just after I retired. And there was a big sense that golf filled a bit of a hole of that camaraderie at that stage. So, look, I think we need support wherever you are, and you need to have shared experiences wherever you are, be it in work or life or sport, and everything is much nicer if you share it. And that's one of the things I would have learned from sport, but I missed a fair bit of it. But I knew my time was up when my time was up, and there's a comforting element to stopping knowing that there wasn't a whole lot more left in the tank. I wanted to play for two weeks more. That was all. I wanted to get to a World Cup final. I wanted to win a World Cup final, which we didn't. But so I finished 2 weeks early in my career, would be the way I'd look at it.
We're going to get into your story in the Heineken Cup shortly, but just want to get your perspective on the time in which you played your career, a time that straddled the amateur and the move into the professionalism of rugby, having won those All-Ireland titles as an amateur and then joining Harlequins. How difficult was that to come to terms with the change in rugby back in that time?
I don't know that it was difficult. I think it was unbelievably exciting. I had a good job in the bank. and I was trying to make the switch and the game was going professional. And we went on to the World Cup in 95. I was 23 years of age, and it was amateur going out there and open when we flew back. So it was very, very quick that happened. I had been injured in that World Cup, and I was asked by Newcastle and Harlequins, would I join? And I decided on Harlequins, but I didn't want to go. I wanted to stay in Ireland, but Ireland hadn't got their act together, and they were offering 40 professional contracts, and I wasn't one of them because I was injured. I said, look, I'm taking this chance and opportunity. And I remember signing a 3-year deal with Harlequins because I knew I'd hate it, that I'd hate the big city, and I wouldn't enjoy myself over there at all. And after about 6 weeks, I said, this was the best decision I ever made. I love the place. I like the people. I thought it was a whole new experience. It was a big eye-opener for me for a different world from a small rural town in County Clare and Killaloe. And so this was a pretty big change. And I embraced it. And I loved it, actually. I thought it was great fun. I thought the world was an awful lot bigger very quickly. And I loved having gone over there. So I do appreciate that, too. I thought Harlequins were very good to me. But I loved it. It was a perfect time. You know, at that age, the world's your oyster.
The Heineken Cup actually started in 1995 without the English clubs. Obviously, you mentioned the travel to South Africa for the Rugby World Cup, that famous Rugby World Cup back in 1995. But then all of a sudden, you have a tournament with a lot of international travel once the English clubs first played in the tournament in 1996-97. How did you look at that as players when it first came into being?
We didn't pay any attention to it in the first year because we weren't in it. And honestly, and I go back at this time and time again, people overthink what players feel at certain times. They're concentrating on playing. So an awful lot of the politics that's going around at the outside, yes, it does have an impact. And as you get older and you take on a more senior role, you tend to get far more involved in it. But for the most part, you're just thinking of playing. And it just wasn't on our radar at all because we weren't in it. Then we did get in it, and it proved to be quite a chastening experience. But it was phenomenal. Harlequins were a cup team. We had embraced professionalism. It took a few years to get that right and sorted. Europe was daunting because you were playing against teams that seemed to suit better than it had suited us at the time. And I think pretty soon it became big. But even then, within Ireland, they were trying to entice players back, still play for Harlequins, but go back and play for Munster, maybe. You could play for two clubs, because that's what they thought. It was a naivety at the time. And some players did do it. I think it took 5 or 6 years for Europe to really settle down.
We're going to go back and look in the weeks that come on events like Munster winning away to Toulouse in Bordeaux in that semi-final in 1999-2000. That seemed to be the launch pad for Munster having European rugby in their fabric. Once you were playing with Munster in that season, did you get a sense of liftoff at that point?
I did, but it was during the year. There was definitely a journey. There was definitely a sense that the Bordeaux game, the Toulouse game in Bordeaux, could have been a turning point. Every game before that was a turning point. It was as if something ratcheted up, an extra little one or an extra one. So earlier on the year, we beat Colomiers, first time Munster had won on French soil. So that was a big thing. Beating Saracens in Saracens was a really big deal. That World Cup captain Francois Pienaar and their side, they had a really, really good team. We were an interesting blend of a team in 1999-2000, and there weren't a lot of big stars in our team at all, but there were guys who became big stars afterwards, and it was definitely the start of something. And then playing Saracens in a full Thomen Park was extraordinary, and winning with Ron Nogara, popping over a conversion in off the post to win by a point. If you're going to do it, you might as well do it a little bit tight. And I remember in that changing room after that game was the first time that Brian O'Brien, who was our manager at the time, who had been an Irish selector, played a few times for Ireland in the 60s and early 70s. Brian O started singing Stand Up and Fight. Stand over the zone, train over low. led that side in the change room for the first time, and it became the anthem for Munster. So there were so many things that started. The match in Bordeaux was extraordinary for a variety of reasons. We had a huge crowd, had decided that this was too good a trip to not go to. And I don't know how many thousands went, but there were thousands for Munster. It was 30 degrees plus in the ground. Not my favourite weather, I have to say. The old bald head gets quite pink very quickly. And scrummaging and being bald in that heat, just not a lot of fun. And it was an amazing game because of the quality of play. So it wasn't about anything that went on apart from forwards and backs played a running game for 80 minutes to beat the aristocrats of Europe pretty much on their home turf. So that was an amazing thing.
This is Crotty. Oh yes, O'Gara is in! Another lead for Munster, and what a magnificent try! You won't see better. That is sensational.
And we didn't get it all the way. We didn't go as far as we wanted to. We got to the final, and for a variety of reasons, we didn't get it. But one of them is, and they always get overlooked in this, but Northampton played unbelievably well. I mean, they played at the absolute peak of their powers on that day, and they beat us 9-8. You know, it's one of my favourite and worst memories in equal measure.
That goes the referee's whistle goes for the end of the match, and so Munster have been thwarted. Northampton have won at last, and well, you can see how thrilled they are.
Do you remember the excitement among the group in the build-up to that match at Twickenham off the back of what a sensational win that you described in Bordeaux against Toulouse?
Yeah, I mean, it was sensational. We had had the 90s in Ireland, we hadn't had a huge amount of joy in rugby, if we're honest. And at the start of 2000, we beat France in Paris for the first time in 28 years. You know, we suddenly started to start picking up some wins. We suddenly started having people believing in their capabilities as a team. I think it took a bit longer for them to believe in their capabilities of individuals before they got to the heights that they could have got to. But they started believing in the team. And suddenly, when you have that's a very potent thing to have on the field. So the excitement was huge. We were very much daunted by the game in Bordeaux, and yet we came out of it flying. And when we got to the final, yes, it was a huge, huge, huge day for us. But we'd had little to no experience of those days. That was the issue. And I think we froze a little bit. I think we got a bit over anxious with it. We were almost too excited by the game, and we didn't quite deliver on what we should have done.
For 20 years since that, we've been used to the full Thomond Park in European competition, the red jerseys all over Europe, the fields of Athenry. The fields of Athenry was ringing out at full time after losing the game 9-8 in Twickenham. You could only really hear Munster fans. Was that the moment when the switch flicked for the province as a whole, and it became part of the fabric of the whole club, really, European rugby?
Well, I remember, and I just described it a little bit earlier, but the full-time whistle ended, and I never felt as low in my career, because you want to dream big. You know, you don't want to say, no, it doesn't matter if we don't win or lose. You actually want to leave it all on the table. And I think we did in many respects. And it's a horrible feeling, that because there's no extra few minutes that you might get a score. That's it. It's over, the finality of it. And then 30 seconds later, 40,000 maybe Munster fans in there on that day in Twickenham, you know, in the home of English rugby, singing the Fields of Athenry. I thought that was amazing. And I remember we flew back into Shannon, and the Mick Galway, who was our captain, stood up, and there was a huge amount of people stayed in the airport. We're all in Shannon Airport. And he stood up and he said, "I'm sorry we let you down." And he apologised to the fans. And I think that was as important as anything else. You know, nobody had taken anything for granted. We had accepted the fact that we were all in it together, and we were the ones who had to deliver, and we hadn't on that day. I thought it was an amazing piece of leadership from Galway. And it was the right tone, actually. And look, there was another couple of hiccups along the way in another final and semis, and things didn't go perfectly. But I always said that there was a bond forged that day that Munster were going to have to win it again.
You mentioned the nerves with the boot of Ronan O'Gara in the game against Saracens and so many others. We go back to the Miracle match and so many big contests that Munster were to play down the year. The record point scorer in Europe, he was named the best player of the first 15 years of the Heineken Cup. As a teammate, just how good was he? What kind of confidence did he give to all of the guys around him?
Well, when I played with him, he was a kid and he was learning how to play at the highest level, kind of dropped in at the deep end, and he missed his fair share of kicks when he was younger. We had a brilliant conversation on off the ball recently with him, and he started explaining some of his confidence and his nerves and his belief and where he was vulnerable and how he was vulnerable afterwards. It was actually fascinating because I would have seen that firsthand when I was playing with him, to how he would deal with it when he wasn't confident. That was quite extraordinary. And that breaks most players, actually. It didn't break Rog. And he seemed to become better and more nerveless and more understanding of the game, of how to maneuver a game. And still, for my mind, he was a fantastic kicker. And he was an excellent out half, but he was one of the best maneuvers of a back three, an opposition back three that I've ever seen. His ability to keep the forwards going forward, relieving kicks, probing kicks that would pop in over the top and suddenly trickle into touch used to drive people crazy, the opposition. But like, we loved it because he just had that ability to have a team constantly going forward. So look, I thought he delivered and delivered and delivered.
Wood trying to get through, Leamy. Wood has
O'Gara's
to
back.
Be careful,
O'Gara's
there
back.
It is, it's all on this, Ronan O'Gara, Ronan O'Gara! Oh, what a finish!
He is still very humble about that award that he received about the 15 years of the Heineken Cup and being named the best player of that. And it's probably a good link to come on to the accolade that you received in 2001, which really showed the form that you were in at that time. The inaugural World Rugby Player of the Year, joining names on that list of honour that now include Johnny Wilkinson, Dan Carter, Richie McCaw, Brian Habana, Shane Williams, Johnny Sexton. Looking back, that must make you really proud to be not just remembered in that company, but to be regularly considered as one of the world's best.
Well, look, it does. And it's funny, I struggle with the idea of awards. I always do. It's a team game. It isn't an individual game. It's a very nice thing to have, but I still am comfortable. I played well in 2001, but I played well in a Lions team that, fell short, which really annoyed me, down in Australia. We won the Challenge Cup, the European Challenge Cup with Harlequins that year, which was fantastic. Ireland did really well in the Foot and Mouth Internationals, and we beat England for the first time in 7 or 8 years. And we had some pretty extraordinary autumn matches that year. And I mention all those different teams because, you only get those awards because the team do the job. If you're not in a position to do it, you're not in, if you're not in finals or you're not in the Lions tour, you're not going to get any of those things, So everything, all those individual awards come on the back of what a team does. And it's a bit of a bugbear for me. I used to reprimand one of my players at one stage because he'd point to his name at the back of his jersey when he'd score a try. And I'd say, did you score that try on your own? Or did other guys get the ball into your hands for you to do it, So I understand it, but I always say it's indicative of the teams that you're playing for.
You mentioned that success in the Challenge Cup final with Quins against Narbonne in the Medeski Stadium in Reading. An incredible match to be involved in. And how did it feel at the end of it to lift a European trophy?
I had been injured for 6 weeks. And I was brought back in to play in the final. So I started at hooker in the final. And I would have been in good nick, but I was absolutely not match sharp. And I was against Mario Ledesma, who everybody knows as a coach, the Argentinian coach now. He was a horrible man to play against. He was incredibly strong. He was just like a magnificent player, tough, heavy, heavy hitting, heavy scrummaging. And Narbonne had a phenomenal pack. That game ended in a draw and I was absolutely shattered, and having played 80 minutes, which most hookers tend to only play 55, 60 now, so that was 80 in a final. It then went to 30 minutes extra time And in the first minute of extra time, David Wilson, our Australian number seven, phenomenal player, tore his cruciate in his knee. And I went to open side for the last half an hour. So I don't even know if I enjoyed that game. It was horrible. But I remember afterwards, we won, and we won well at the end. And it was an amazing feeling with about 5 minutes to go to know that we'd won. But when the final whistle went and I went across the field, I remember I got a pat in the back, and only for Jason Leonard, I'd have fallen flat in my face. I was shattered. I brushed past my wife. I didn't recognize her. I just had to get into the changing room. I needed to sit down. I was on the verge of collapse. So I don't appear in an awful lot of the photographs. The only photograph is lifting aloft the trophy with Will Greenwood, because it had taken me that long to get out of the change room. But you play rugby to win, and I'd like to have won far more in my career. And so that is it's the second tier European competition. It didn't feel like it that day. It felt pretty amazing to have a bit of silverware.
I was just about to say about your playing for so many different sides at such a high level for such an intense period of time. How did the body stand up to it through your career?
I had a huge number of injuries. I've had 12 shoulder operations. In many respects, the operations I had, which put me out for a period of time, probably meant I had that length of career. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but I missed maybe the same amount of games for Ireland as through injury as I got. My body was kind of broken, but every guy's body is broken playing rugby. It's a bloody tough game. It's very, very tough. It's worth it, I think. And I loved it, loved every bit of it. I retired at 31 because my shoulder was in bad order. It was fine for that World Cup. And I was as fit as I'd ever been, and my shoulder worked properly and everything was good, and I was very happy with it. But that was an injury that was going to happen again. And the next time it happened, I could have been more infirm. And I thought that was a risk worth having for 2003 for a World Cup, but it wasn't worth having going forward. So to be honest, I thank the fact that I stopped, because I'm 17 years retired and I'm fine. I have no real legacy issues. I'm a little bit stiffer and slower than I used to be. My back whinges a bit. And if you asked me to throw a ball now, people would have said I couldn't throw it then, but I definitely can't throw it now. But I look back on it and say, yeah, I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
Since you've retired, what have you made of the development on the field of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup and of European club rugby tournaments in general? I mean, what do you make of it from your position these days in media?
The Heineken Cup has become one of the most essential cups for Irish clubs in particular, because the standard is of such a high level. It also has a huge following support. It is also considered a huge occasion. And because there's an awful lot of sport on the television all the time, I think if you're looking to try and see what's the heightened level of sport, it's the ones that are considered occasions. So I've commentated on Heineken Cup matches in Marseille that are just a joy to have been down there, you know. And I still do a bit of commentary, but not a huge amount anymore. And I will admit I cherry pick every now and then to go. And I want to go to the ones that just set the world on fire. So it doesn't matter whether there's a team that I've been associated with in it or not. It's just that sense of occasion. The final in Newcastle a couple of years ago was just wonderful. It was a lovely sunny day. Newcastle looked beautiful. And all the fans were just in great form. So I think it's become something that's central. I know that we're in a strange period of time at the moment where I think rugby calendars are all going to be redrafted to some degree. But the latter end of the Heineken Cup and the cup nature of a European, a pan-European competition, I think is essential, absolutely essential.
Well, Keith, we really appreciate the work that you do, not just for the European Club Rugby tournaments, but for rugby in general through your various media outlets and appearances. And we really appreciate you joining us today on the Champions Rugby Show to take us through your career in the tournament, which still has many more chapters to write from your vantage point these days. So thank you very much. And we hope that you carry on enjoying looking back at some of these nostalgic matches. And we look forward to your reflections on them.
Thank you, Martin. Great pleasure to be on.
An intriguing walk down memory lane with Irish legend and former World Rugby Player of the Year, Keith Wood. Please subscribe and rate our Champions Rugby Show podcast. Drop us a little bit of a review as well if you've enjoyed it. We've got another European legend coming up shortly to share their stories from a quarter of a century of history in what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. So look out for that one. Until then, from me, goodbye.